Can you imagine lying under oath to a grand jury and then trying to argue your Miranda rights were violated?
It sounds pretty bold, doesn't it?
Yeah. Today, we're diving deep into United States v. Mandujano. This case really throws the Fifth Amendment, perjury, and, you know, the power of the grand jury into the legal blender.
Absolutely. And for any law student listening, understanding Mandujano is, well, it's crucial. It really helps clarify the lines around Miranda warnings.
Specifically where they don't apply, right? Like the grand jury room.
Exactly. It highlights that tension, the duty to testify versus the right not to incriminate yourself. It's a tricky balance.
For sure. So we've dug into a podcast script guide, a detailed case brief, and a standard brief on Mandujano to really get to the heart of it.
Our goal today is to unpack the facts, break down the court's thinking, and figure out what it all means practically for future lawyers.
We'll be tackling some big questions. Does Miranda even come into play for grand jury witnesses?
Can you actually be prosecuted for perjury if you weren't read those full warnings?
And what about this whole idea of criminal attempt? That was another piece of the Mandujano puzzle we need to look at.
Okay, so let's set the scene first. What actually brought Mr. Mandujano to the grand jury's attention?
Right, the backstory. It started with a drug deal, didn't it? An undercover agent was involved.
Yeah, that's right. So Mandujano was trying to set up a heroin deal. He actually took $650 from an undercover agent.
Okay, so money changed hands.
It did, but then the deal itself, it fell through. Mandujano ended up giving the money back.
But that initial transaction, even though it failed, that led to charges.
Yes, that formed the basis for a federal charge against him for attempted distribution of heroin. That's one key part.
Got it. Attempted distribution. So that's one track. Then separately, he gets a subpoena.
Correct. A subpoena to testify before a federal grand jury.
And what was that grand jury looking into?
They were doing a broader investigation into drug trafficking in the area.
Okay. So he goes in. Does he get any warnings at all?
He gets some. They told him he had the right to have a lawyer, but importantly, the lawyer had to wait outside the grand jury room.
Outside? Okay. Not ideal.
Right. And they did warn him about perjury. You know, that lying under oath could lead to prosecution.
But not the full Miranda warnings. The right to remain silent. Anything you say can be used against you.
Yeah.
None of that.
No, not the full Miranda script we associate with police arrests. That's the critical point.
Okay, so there he is, testifying. No full Miranda. And then he lies.
Allegedly, yes. During his testimony, he made statements that the government later determined were false.
And that led to?
That led to a second set of charges. Perjury. Lying under oath.
This is where it gets really interesting legally, right? His lawyers must have challenged this.
They did, absolutely. They argued in the district court that his grand jury testimony should be suppressed, thrown out.
On what grounds?
Their argument was basically that the grand jury setting, even without handcuffs, was coercive enough to be considered custody.
Ah, so they're saying it was like a police interrogation, functionally?
Pretty much. They argued he was a putative defendant, basically a target, and being compelled to testify made it custodial, meaning he should have gotten Miranda warnings.
And did the district court buy that?
Surprisingly, yes, at first. The district court agreed, suppressed the testimony, and actually dismissed the perjury indictment based on the lack of Miranda.
Wow. So that sets up a major showdown at the Supreme Court.
Definitely. The core issue becomes, is a grand jury appearance the same as being in police custody for Miranda purposes?
What's the key difference the higher courts focused on? How do they distinguish the two settings?
Well, they looked at the typical police interrogation. You're often, you know, physically detained, maybe in a small room, questioned directly by officers, and you can't just walk out. That environment has inherent pressures.
Right, the classic Miranda scenario.
Exactly. Now contrast that with the grand jury. Yes, you're legally required to be there by the subpoena.
You can't just ignore it.
No. But typically, you're not physically restrained. You testify before the jurors and the prosecutor. And crucially, once you're done testifying,
you can leave.
Generally, yes. Unless you're held in contempt, maybe for refusing to answer after being ordered to, you walk out. That freedom to leave was a big factor for the Supreme Court.
Okay, that distinction makes sense. Less physical restraint, ability to leave. So how did the Supreme Court ultimately rule on Miranda in this context?
The Supreme Court, Chief Justice Berger, wrote the main opinion. They were very clear.
What was the holding?
The core holding was Miranda warnings are only required for custodial interrogations and grand jury testimony. That's generally not custodial.
So Mandujano wasn't entitled to Miranda before testifying?
According to the majority, no, he wasn't. The lack of those warnings didn't violate his rights in that setting.
Did the court say anything specifically about the perjury itself, about the act of lying?
Oh, absolutely. Chief Justice Berger was emphatic. He basically said, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, perjury has no place in our justice system.
Strong words.
Very. The idea is the duty to tell the truth under oath is fundamental. Lying under oath, perjury, is a crime in itself. It's not somehow excused just because you weren't read Miranda warnings in a non-custodial setting like the grand jury.
So the Fifth Amendment protects your right to stay silent.
Yes. Your right against compelled self-incrimination. You can plead the Fifth if an answer might incriminate you.
But it doesn't protect your right to lie.
Absolutely not. The court made that crystal clear. Lying under oath gets no Fifth Amendment protection.
What about the Sixth Amendment? The right to counsel. Did that play a role here regarding the grand jury?
The court touched on that too. They explained that the Sixth Amendment right to counsel usually kicks in later, when formal charges are filed, you know, when things become truly adversarial.
So not typically at the grand jury stage.
Literally not. The grand jury is seen as an investigative body, not the trial itself. So just being subpoenaed, even if you're a target, doesn't automatically trigger the Sixth Amendment right to have a lawyer present during the testimony.
Okay. Now, these big Supreme Court cases often have different opinions, concurrences, dissents. Was Mendizano unanimous?
No, there were concurring opinions that add some important nuance. Justice Brennan agreed with the outcome that perjury is punishable.
But he had concerns.
He did. Brennan worried about prosecutors potentially using the grand jury to go after virtual defendants, people they already suspect, without giving them the full protection, like access to counsel inside the room. He felt there should be more scrutiny in those situations.
So a concern about fairness and potential prosecutorial overreach.
Kind of, yeah. He wanted to make sure the grand jury wasn't being used strategically to get around protection someone might have in, say, a police station interrogation, especially if they're already the main suspect.
Were there other concurrences?
Justice Stewart also concurred, but his reasoning was much narrower.
How so?
Stewart basically said, look, the Fifth Amendment just doesn't protect perjury, full stop. Since Mendizano lied, and that lie was the basis for the perjury charge, that's all we need to decide. He felt they didn't even need to get into the weeds of Miranda or the Sixth Amendment in the grand jury context for this particular issue.
So just focus on the fact that lying isn't protected.
Pretty much. Reverse the lower court because the Fifth doesn't shield perjury. Simple as that for him.
Okay, that clarifies the different judicial perspectives on the perjury and Miranda side. But let's shift gears back to that other charge, the attempted heroin distribution. How did the court handle that?
Right, good point. The court also had to decide if Mandujano's actions were enough to constitute an attempt to distribute heroin under federal law.
What's the legal test for attempt? What do you need to prove?
Generally, under federal law and many state laws, you need two things for attempt. First, the defendant must have the specific intent to commit the actual crime.
So he intended to distribute the heroin?
Yes. And second, they must have taken a substantial step towards completing that crime. It has to be more than just thinking about it or preparing.
A substantial step.
Mm-hmm.
What does Mendizano do that the court considered substantial?
Well, the court pointed to a few things. He negotiated the deal terms with the agent. Crucially, he accepted the $650 payment.
Ah, taking the money was key.
It was a very significant factor. And he apparently made some efforts to actually get the heroin to deliver, even though the deal wasn't finished and he gave the money back.
Those earlier actions were enough.
Yes. The court said accepting the payment and trying to get the drugs moved him beyond mere preparation. That was the substantial step, demonstrating his intent. The fact that he failed didn't undo the attempt.
So it's about the intent and the action taken, not necessarily the final result.
Exactly. Attempt law focuses on the defendant's actions and state of mind at the time they took that substantial step. Success isn't required.
Okay, let's boil this down. For the law students listening, what are the absolute must-know takeaways from Mendizano?
Okay, key points. First, Miranda warnings. Generally not required for grand jury witnesses because it's not considered custodial interrogation. That's a big one.
Got it. No Miranda in the grand jury room, usually.
Second, the Fifth Amendment right to remain silent is vital, but it absolutely does not give you a right to lie under oath. Perjury is prosecutable, Miranda or no Miranda in this context.
Okay, silence is protected, lying isn't. Makes sense.
And third, for criminal attempt, remember, it's intent plus a substantial step. You have to do something significant towards completing the crime, not just get ready.
Intent plus substantial step. Crystal clear. Now let's push our thinking a bit. What if Mandejano hadn't lied? What if he just refused to answer certain questions, invoking the fifth?
Ah, that's the crucial difference. If he had a legitimate fear that answering a specific question could incriminate him, he could have asserted his Fifth Amendment privilege.
Plead the fifth.
Exactly. Now, if he did that, the prosecutors couldn't just charge him with perjury. They might try to compel his testimony, perhaps by offering immunity.
And if he still refused after immunity or a court order?
Then he could potentially face contempt of court charges. But that's very different from being charged with perjury for actively lying. Asserting your rights truthfully is protected. Lying isn't.
That's a critical distinction.
Mm-hmm.
How might prosecutors use grand juries now, knowing Miranda isn't required? Any ethical flags?
Well, this goes back to Justice Brennan's concern, right? The ruling does give prosecutors more leeway to question potential targets without Miranda. They can gather information, and if the witness lies, they have perjury charges available. Ethically, prosecutors still shouldn't misuse the grand jury, but Mandejano certainly clarifies their powers in this setting.
And thinking about that substantial step for attempt, does that same idea apply to other crimes? Like, say, attempted robbery?
Absolutely. The substantial step test is pretty standard for attempt across the board. For attempted robbery, just scouting the bank might be preparation. But walking in with a mask and a note, that's almost certainly a substantial step.
Even if you get tackled at the door?
Even then. The attempt was made. It applies to attempted burglary, attempted assault. You look for that concrete action that clearly shows the criminal intent moving towards completion.
Okay, before we wrap up, let's clear up any potential confusion. What are some common pitfalls or misunderstandings about Mandejano?
Good idea. First, remember Mandejano faced two separate things. The perjury charge from the grand jury lies and the attempted drug charge from the earlier deal. The Miranda issue primarily affected the perjury case initially.
Right, two distinct legal battles.
Second, the Supreme Court did not say perjury is okay. Not at all. They just said Miranda wasn't the shield. Mandejano thought it was for perjury committed in a non-custodial grand jury setting.
The focus was on the setting and the nature of the right.
Exactly. And finally, this case really reinforces the grand jury's role as an investigative body, separate from trial, and confirms that Miranda's specific protections are tied to the pressures of custodial interrogation. It limits Miranda's reach.
So, summing up, United States v. Mandejano. It's a really pivotal case for understanding Fifth Amendment rights, specifically the limits of Miranda concerning grand juries, and also for grasping the elements of criminal attempt.
Absolutely. It draws that line between custody and non-custody quite sharply in the grand jury context, yeah. And it hammers home that core principle. You have the right to silence, but never the right to lie under oath.
Okay, here's a final thought for everyone listening to Chew On. Given how strongly the court emphasized the duty to testify truthfully, how does this ruling shape the ethical tightrope an attorney walks when advising a client called before a grand jury, especially if that client might be a target?
That's a fantastic question. It really highlights the complex balancing act, doesn't it? Protecting your client's rights while respecting the integrity of the legal process and the serious consequences of perjury.
It definitely adds layers to consider about grand jury practice, Fifth Amendment strategies, and understanding these preparatory or inchoate crimes.
For sure. Mandejano leaves us with a lot to think about regarding the practical application of these constitutional principles.